We have about 15 to 20 minutes for a few questions, and I'm looking around. I think the first question will be asked by one of our young leaders. We have the Munich Young Leaders each year, and I see one of the young ladies in the back. This is, if I'm not mistaken, Olga Sotnik, who is a member of the International Affairs Committee of the Estonian Parliament. So, Olga, shoot.
Thank you. Does it work? Yes, great. Good evening. Oh, good day, everyone. It's really a big honor for me to ask the first question in this great conference. I would like, first of all, thank all three speakers for this really nice starting speeches. And I hope that young leaders will forgive me, but my question will be about my region, my Baltic region. I would like to start my question, and I will address it to Mr. Stoltenberg. And Mr. Falk Rasmussen in the Telegraph today published an article and said, I'm citating now, "This is not about Ukraine. Putin wants to restore Russia to its former position as a great power. There's a high probability that he will intervene in the Baltics to test NATO's Article 5. Putin knows that if he crosses the red line and attacks a NATO ally, he will be defeated. Let us be quite clear about that. But he's a specialist in hybrid warfare." Do you share the same opinion with Mr. Rasmussen? Could you please comment on that? Thank you.
Maybe what we'll do, if you agree, we'll collect two or three and then go back to the panel. So where's the next question? I have one on my cards. Well, there's one question from Philip Stevens. Philip, please. Way in the back.
My name is Philip Stevens from the Financial Times. I wonder if I could ask the German minister about her comments on providing arms to the Ukrainian government. You pointed out logically that the danger that this would provoke Russia. But what we've seen in the last year is not providing arms also provokes Russia, because it just moves ahead. I wonder, are there any circumstances in which a German government would support arming the, as you said, democratically elected government in Ukraine? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And maybe one more question from one of the cards. This is a question also directed to Minister Frau von der Leyen, and it comes from Elmar Tevesen of ZDF. And I think I can read this. Why is Germany not joining the fight against the Islamic State directly? He means through military engagement, I imagine. So who would like to go first? Would you like to go first?
As you please, no problem. I can combine both questions to one answer, because the question of providing arms and delivering arms, we've raised that question with regard to the Iraq, and we answered with yes. And the German government answers with no, looking at the Ukraine. So I can combine the answer in for two. If you look at the Iraq, Daesh is a group where no form of dialogue is thinkable. They are plain and simply killing everybody who has a different opinion or religion. This is different to the situation we have in the Ukraine and with Russia. There is a room for dialogue. There is a channel for dialogue. It is a difficult one, but we have the Minsk agreement. We have the OSCE, where there is a room where all of them sit at the same table. Second part is, what kind of arms would be necessary so that you have to think to the end? What do you want to achieve? You want to achieve, of course, that the side you are supporting has a positive effect out of it. The support with arms for Daesh is limited. They have pretty modern arms, but it is limited. The support with arms from Russia to the separatists is potentially unlimited. And do we really count on being able to provide as many arms to the Ukrainian army that they could potentially conquer the other side? If you look at Daesh, the kind of arms we delivered were effective. Of course, this will be a long fight, but if you look at the Peshmerga, they were able at least to stop Daesh, killing the refugees fleeing to northern Iraq. They were able to defend their own territory. They were even able to fight back into territory that has been taken. And they were able to win back Kobani. This is not the end of the war. This is a long war going on. But at least it was predictable that with the Peshmerga and their courage and their organization, it would be, we would be able to deliver arms that are effective looking at the other combatant. And the last point for the Ukraine, I think this is the most important one, is in the Ukraine, it is not only a fight about delivering arms or not. I think with the example of the Ukraine and the behavior of Russia, we are fighting a fundamental fight about the question whether in the 21st century, highly developed countries solve their conflicts with arms or solve them at the negotiation table. And we are determined to show that the only place where a solution can be found is the negotiation table. And therefore, as I said, we are using different means, and the economic sanctions are a very sharp sword. It is hurting Russia at the most vulnerable place where it can be hurted. It's difficult to defeat Russia, what the army is concerned. It will cost many, many, many lives. But obviously in the economy, it is easier to find a vulnerable place in Russia's structure. And that is where we have to be smart and to intervene and to tell Russia that the price is high, they are paying for what they are doing. We do not know the end of the story, but this is at the moment my position.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary General.
That was the question related to whether there was a threat against Latvia. And we don't see any immediate threat against any NATO ally, not least because the alliance is able to provide collective security. So the NATO alliance is doing what we are expected to do, and that is to defend and protect all allies against any possible threat. Anyone that would consider to attack one of the allied countries will know that they will meet the whole alliance. And also that's one of the reasons why we are establishing the six new command and control units in all the three Baltic countries, in Poland, Romania and Bulgaria, to underline that the national defense of those countries is very closely linked to the multinational defense, the collective defense of NATO. But what we see is a changing security environment. It has changed and it is changing. And NATO has to adapt to that to be able to provide collective defense also in the future in a new and changing security environment. And that's what we are doing. We have started the changes, the adaptation measures already. We have increased our military presence in the eastern part of the alliance, with air policing, with more troops, with more ships. And we are implementing what we call the Readiness Action Plan, for instance, establishing this enhanced NATO response force and establishing the very high readiness spearhead force. This was decisions we actually made yesterday. We're going to continue to implement them to be able to provide security also for Latvia and all other NATO allies also in the future.
Thank you very much. I think we have time for one more round. What I propose to you is I have one question in writing to Jens Stoltenberg from Alexander Dinkin from IMEMO in Moscow. And I have two questions that are going to be asked from the floor from François Esbourg and from Steve Larrabee back there. So I'll start reading this and then we take the two questions and then I think we need to conclude. These are two questions. We are facing the failure of big Europe from Lisbon to Vladivostok. Question number one, does NATO feel at least a small responsibility for that failure? Question mark. Second question, do you still believe in partnership without membership? Question mark. So you can think about that, and we take François' question.
A quick question to each of you. Secretary General Stoltenberg, unlike Madame van der Leyen, you did not mention the arms to Ukraine issue. Is that because you do not wish to express your personal view? Would be interesting to have it. Is it because NATO has not actually discussed this? Or is it because NATO disagrees on this? Or none of the above? The question to Madame van der Leyen, it's prompted by the comment you just made on sanctions being a sharp sword. I agree with that. They are a very sharp sword. Their effect is very, very damaging. Historically, sanctions, when they're applied to revisionist states, like Italy in 1936, like Japan in 1941, like Milosevic during the 90s, sanctions are perceived by the recipient as the equivalent of a weapon of war, as the equivalent of a sword. And they can prompt military reaction no less surely and possibly even more surely than military assistance of a direct nature to defend the sovereignty of a member state of the United Nations, Ukraine.
Okay, and Steve Larrabee. Can someone give the mic?
Thank you. My question goes to the Minister van der Leyen, and it goes back again to the question of arms deliveries. You said that arms deliveries do not alone will not solve the problem, and that is obviously true. But that overlooks the more critical issue, which is the one that Philip Stevens raised, that one side of the party is not living up to that. That is to say that Putin has continued to use arms to solve questions, and he's being rather successful about it, and we are not responding with a very effective policy. Because if I were to look at the situation and perhaps the advisor comes to Mr. Putin and he says, you know, you've got to be a little careful here. The United States might react. I think Putin would laugh in his face because every time that Putin has reacted with military force, we have not done anything. So, and I think that is the heart of the problem. Second point on Peshmerga. Yes, I don't want to take anything away from the Peshmerga. Having troops on the ground is important. But, you know, without the air power that the United States provided, the situation would look very different. So I don't think you can compare the two. And I just end with that again, that what I hear, it seems to me, is a lot of illusions that somehow Putin is going to, because of the sanctions, come to the negotiating table with serious proposals. I don't believe that. I think it is clear that his goal is to stir the pot and keep it boiling, but below a certain level where he cannot be accused openly of violating the rules of the game.
Thank you, Steve. Maybe we'll start with you, Secretary General, and then Frau von der Leyen has the concluding word, please.
So first about Ukraine and support for Ukraine and the weapons for Ukraine. So what NATO is doing to support Ukraine is at least three things. First, we provide strong political support. That is important, and we have stated that again and again, the support of Ukraine as an independent, sovereign country and respect for its territorial integrity. Second, we support not only political support, but also practical support for Ukraine. We help them with modernizing, reforming their armed forces. We have established trust funds, and we are working with a lot of practical issues together with Ukraine to try to make them more resilient, more able to protect themselves. Thirdly, what we do when it comes to changing our defense posture, the implementation of the readiness action plan, creating the spearhead force, establishing the command units in the six Eastern Allied countries. All this is also a contribution, an important element in keeping NATO stable, and it's a clear response to what we see in Ukraine. What NATO do not do, or what we don't do, is to provide weapons, because NATO does not possess weapons. We don't have weapons. So this is not an issue where NATO makes decisions. It's up to each and every ally to make decisions related to the provisions of weapons. It's not a NATO issue on our agenda. Then to the question of whether I believe in partnership without membership. And the answer is yes. I'm a very strong believer in partnership. Some partnerships ends in membership, and that's good. But many partnerships will never end in membership. And that's also good as long as it is a result of the free decision of independent nations and the 28 allies in NATO. We are very much focused on the importance of developing partnership as a way to project stability without deploying forces. I visited Jordan together with the rest of the North Atlantic Council just before Christmas. We are very much developing a partnership with Jordan, and that's a way for NATO to increase the capacity of Jordan, help them create stability in their own country and in their own region. I think no one foresee or expect Jordan to become a member of NATO, but we very much believe that we have to develop the partnership with Jordan and with Iraq and with other countries in North Africa or the Middle East. The same to the East, or Moldova is an important partner of NATO. It has not been on the agenda whether Moldova would like to apply for membership. So I think we have to be very much in favor of partnership as an important tool to work with many different countries. Sweden and Finland, excellent partners of NATO. And I will not, as I say, mention the possibility of going further, because I know those. Also, that's another issue. So we have to be able to see the value of partnerships without always addressing membership. Then I believe in the vision of Europe, whole, free, and at peace. And I have been working for that for decades. My experience as a Norwegian politician was that it was possible and a good thing to develop very close cooperation with Russia. And I've been worked with Russia and Russian governments for decades. We have developed excellent cooperation in military matters, in fishery, in energy, in border issues, a lot of issues. And we were able to work together with Russia, not because we were, weak, but because we were strong. We had our own defense, we were part of NATO, and that created the basis for the close cooperation with Russia. So for me, in a way, a precondition for working with Russia is that we have the self-confidence which is provided by us or by the NATO alliance. And therefore, a precondition for cooperation is that we respect each other, and the most fundamental expression of respecting each other is to respect borders. And that's the problem with what we have seen the last year, is that borders have not been respected, and that's not NATO that has changed borders by the use of force. It's Russia. So therefore, they have the main. They have the responsibility for the problems we now are facing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to be brief on the airstrikes you mentioned. You're absolutely right. I'm with you. Without the airstrikes, the success, partly success in Iraq, wouldn't have been possible. So no question about that. I want to answer to your question. You said that history shows that sanctions always prompt military actions, correct? Well, I'm wondering if we would not have imposed sanctions on Russia, are we sure that Russia would not have done what it has done in the eastern Ukraine? So it's not the cause, were not the sanctions for the hybrid warfare Russia led against the Ukraine, but whatever you just said was the cause for being as aggressive in the Ukraine. And still, I think that not to answer with the same means as Russia to what Russia is doing in the eastern Ukraine is smarter. Because if we look at what the sanctions do in Russia, it is not the plain effect of sanctions that is playing the major role, but it is the loss of confidence in the investors' world, which is the most dramatic, has the most dramatic influence on the Russian economy. It's the capital flight. Of course, a low oil price does help. And we've seen the last year how Russia tried to push and push and push forward what Russia wanted to achieve. For example, they wanted to prevent the free elections in the Ukraine. They were not successful with that. Because of the sanctions, they over and over did not push as hard as they would have pushed without a reaction from the West, which was appropriate by economic means. What I think in this fascinating conference here would be extremely important is think of a potential solution of the conflict which is beyond weapons. Think of the solution corridor that might be, for example, find another common interest with Russia. That might be fight Islamism, the Islamic State, because Russia has the same fear and worries about foreign fighters as we do have in Europe. So find other regions where we have a common interest to go back to a conference table, and then by this way be able to find a channel of dialogue again that is appropriate to have a solution in the Ukraine that respects the position of the Ukraine to be a sovereign state, but of course to have the tension between autonomy of some regions and integrity of the Ukraine. That should be the goal.
Thank you very much. I think this was a wonderful beginning with many important questions, which I'm sure we will continue to discuss over the next couple of days. So let's give a hand to our two speakers. Thank you very much. Vielen Dank.